Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Right Stream Radio Network, rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at RightStream and hashtag RightStream. Thanks for listening to the Right Stream Radio Network.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Right Stream Tuesday. This is your host, Daria Ann, broadcasting from the beautiful Florida Space Coast, and I want to thank you for joining me today. I hope you all had a wonderful Labor Day weekend. I know I sure did. It was great. It was supposed to rain here all weekend, and fortunately it did not. It rained on Saturday, but Sunday and Monday were hot but beautiful. And I finally did the Causeway climb over 192, which goes up and over the Indian River, and it was just awesome. And then had a relaxing evening out by the pool with some friends, and it was just great. So whatever you did this weekend, I hope it was fun. And again, thank you for joining me. For those of you who don't know me, I am the founder of the Right Stream Radio Network. I'm also an author, a ghostwriter, social media consultant, editor, and let's see, what else do I do? Blogger, all kinds of things. You can find out more about me at dariadigiovanni.com and find out what projects I'm up to. And if you're interested in hiring me for any of the services I mentioned and the services that are listed on my website, you can contact me through my site. There's a contact form right there, and I will be happy to work with you. I just want to mention, this is the month of September, which is Ovarian Cancer Awareness Month, and I have a client's book is coming out just in time for the commemoration of Ovarian Cancer Awareness, and it's called A Snobby Girl's Guide to Dealing with Cancer by Maureen Miles Bucci, and we're putting the finishing touches on it this week, hoping it's going to be available for purchase, hopefully by the end of next week. And if you're, you know, if you want to find out more about that, again, go to my blog right now at dariadigiovanni.com. Maureen's blog is, we're in the process of putting the finishing touches on that, and that will be up and running shortly, and you'll be able to find more information soon. But I don't want to give away the address until it's ready to go. But you can find her on Twitter at Maureen M. Bucci, and that's B-U-C-C-I. Because she is starting to tweet, and look for A Snobby Girl's Guide to Dealing with Cancer in the next couple of weeks. I also want to give a shout-out to my client, Shlomo Atiya, the author of Steps to Salvation, a book that I ghostwrote for him. You can find out more about his book, his novel, at shlomoatiya.wordpress.com. And again, if you go to my blog, dariadigiovanni.com, you can find out more information about his book and all the projects that I work on. I work mainly with authors, but I can also do social media marketing and blog and other services for, you know, new media services for a variety of companies and individuals. So, again, you know, I look forward to hearing from you if you're interested in any of those services, and we can get started very soon. Let's see, what else? Well, you know, today I am just thrilled to be interviewing a returning guest, author Cherry Tigress. And actually, you know, Right Stream was kind of in its infancy the first time Cherry interviewed with me. And she is the author of a book called Toilet Paper People, which is her memoir of surviving child abuse. And it was just haunting. I wrote a review of it. It's just a powerful book, an amazing story. Her survival skills just kind of leave me in awe. And not only did she survive, I mean, she's actually thriving. She's an author and artist. She's got all kinds of great things going on, which we are going to discuss here in a few minutes. But I brought her back today also to talk about the release of Toilet Paper People as an audiobook. And we just went on Amazon today, and it is available there in audio format. And I'm going to definitely chat with Cherry about just the whole process for that and what the reaction has been to the audiobook and how she felt along that whole journey. She also does amazing humanitarian work, and which we'll also discuss this afternoon. So the call-in number, if you would like to call in with your comments and questions during the live show, is 347-945-7246. Again, that's 347-945-7246. And if you prefer not to call in but you still have a question, the chat room is open. I'm keeping an eye on it. So if you prefer to type your question in, or your comment, I will be happy to pass it along to Cherry on the air, and we'll discuss it. So I'm going to read here briefly from one of her websites. She has a couple, and throughout the course of the show, we will definitely be posting the links in the chat room and mentioning the addresses on the air. But I'm going to read the synopsis of Toilet Paper People from the toiletpaperpeople.com website. And this is by author Cherry Tigress. No one is perfect. Born on the West Coast and adopted into the East Coast elite, author Cherry Tigress wasn't even given a deck of cards to play with in this game of life, let alone parents who genuinely cared about her upbringing. Her mentally ill adopted mother is more than happy to play her own hand in cruel and torturous ways that would have even Hannibal Lecter spinning in his grave. Driven by a narcissistic rage that is fueled by a toxic case of consumerism that would please the most adamant followers of Martha Stewart and Oprah, Cherry Tigress' adopted mother follows a strict daily regimen that could be ripped right out of the Better Homes and Gardens catalog. As polished and perfect as things may appear on the outside of this family's tree, the core tells a very different story, as documented by the dolls Cherry Tigress created to sustain her. Building armies of dolls out of toilet paper, Cherry Tigress refuses to succumb to a life of beatings and neglect at the hands of her mentally ill adoptive mother. Opting to fight back in the only way she knows how, Cherry Tigress creates a fantasy world of lovers and fighters who will distract her from a brutally unforgiving childhood of broken promises. While learning life's most crucial lessons at the hands of her toilet paper people, Cherry Tigress develops an unwavering spirit and true grit that is wowing every spine it touches. After feeling emotionally diseased for most of her life, she embarked on the process of writing down what she could remember in order to make sense of what had become her life. She decided to become an advocate for other homeless teens and young adults in response to the overwhelming reception to her book and efforts to bring awareness to child abuse and its toxic effects on society. So, ladies and gentlemen, it is my honor to present author Cherry Tigress.
Hi. Tony, hey. Thank you so much for that introduction. That was really beautiful.
Oh, gosh, you're welcome. I mean, Cherry, I mean it. You are one of the most inspiring people I know, so that definitely came from the heart.
Oh, ditto. And thank you for that review. That was really very very powerful review, and I really appreciate all of your good intentions. I know that you're doing really great things in this world, too. I'm really fortunate to know you.
Ah, well, thank you. Well, Cherry, just for listeners maybe who didn't hear our first interview, let's just talk about your story just in general. Tell us a little bit about, I know I read the synopsis, but tell us a little bit about the evolution of Toilet Paper People, how it came about, and just kind of introduce anyone to the book who may not have heard about it up until now.
Right. Well, I'm happy to say that I have a lot more clarity today than I did the very first time we interviewed about, how all of this came to be and how I was able to even emotionally handle writing the book. I believe that I've learned a lot about post-traumatic stress disorder as it relates to memories. And as I was kind of going through life's trials and tribulations, these episodes would occur, and I wouldn't have a lot of answers, and I would start digging, and I would start having these memories that didn't make sense. And as I started piecing those memories together and talking to therapists, it became really clear that, my childhood was very dysfunctional, to say the least. and so as I started, I wanted to make sure that my memories were accurate, so I went on this journey through music and recording that wound up pretty much, it scratched the surface of my memories, and then it broke wide open, and that's when I felt inspired to write the book Toilet Paper People, because I remembered these little dolls that brought all of this hope, because I've met so many other wounded people. Wounded people kind of gravitate towards one another. And, the common thread was child abuse. And as I started talking to other child abuse survivors, it really became clear that I needed to write this book as a way of bringing hope and light, as opposed to, I didn't want it to just be another awful story about child abuse, because, that would be offending my toilet paper people, the dolls that saved my life. It was a way of distracting myself from, a lot of awful things that I write about in the book.
Yeah, I mean, that is truly a testament to the human spirit and your spirit in particular, that you had the impulse to create, you know, these toilet paper people that became very real to you and you know, sustained you, as you say in your description of the novel. Tell us a little bit about that. Why did, you know, you have to use toilet paper to do that? Again, for a lot of people who may not have heard my last interview with you.
Right.
Very fascinating.
Okay, so why toilet paper? My mom was very OCD, and she did not like having toys around the house. And so she was very punitive in that I would spend days and days and days alone in this room that had all of her antiques. So she, you know, she was someone who would hoard antiques and other valuable items and really didn't want to, you know, look like she had a child, didn't like toys around the house. So she left me with a roll of toilet paper because I had a toilet, a little private toilet in the bathroom. And, you know, as much as I'd like to say that I was this inspirational person who thought of these dolls, I mean, it was really because I'm very competitive, and I wasn't going to be the only kid without toys. So I was, you know, I was very, very stubborn, and I was like, I'm going to make these dolls myself. And I, you know, I found a way to distract myself by becoming really resourceful. So, you know, it was interesting. One of my newest flashbacks is about a lasagna tray that I saw in my co-worker's office. I was like, oh my gosh, what I would have done with that lasagna tray. Like, I would have created the most amazing costumes. So it's like, that's kind of what my mind did to cope with the damage. So.
Yeah, well, that stubbornness and that defiance really was your strength in this situation.
Yeah. And I mean, it's, and one of my things that I like to bring on the road with me when I'm speaking to child abuse survivors and other groups is that, you know, we have a choice every day to survive or to die. And we make that choice every day to talk to ourselves in loving ways. If our parents are not talking to us in loving ways, we have to find a way to create another language. And I did that with my dolls. And, you know, that was my unique language. And as I started talking to child abuse survivors, I started finding out that lots of child abuse survivors have very similar coping techniques, whether they're, you know, creating houses or creating things out of sticks and rocks and whatever it is they do. I mean, we're humans at the end of the day, and we get to choose what kind of day we're going to have. That is regardless of how people are treating us. That's our human right, and something that I really hold dear, and I like to communicate as much as I can.
You know, Sherry, that's really a universal lesson, no matter what your hardship is, whether it's child abuse, whether it's dealing with toxic people at work, or whether it's, you know, you served in the military and all horrific things. I'm sorry, Sherry, you know what? I'm getting a little bit of feedback. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes.
Are you there? Okay, there's a lot of feedback for some reason on the phone, but I was just saying that's really sort of a universal theme. No matter what the issue is, you know, in this case it's child abuse, you still have choices. I mean, you, in the middle of all that horrific abuse, you still had the ability to see, hey, I've got a choice, and I could still choose how I'm gonna think about this and how I'm gonna view myself. I mean,
or I'm gonna be in denial. And sometimes, you know, people will say denial is such a bad thing. No, it's not. Sometimes being in denial is the safest place to be for a little while. Well, you know, like I the biggest surprise in releasing the book and then doing the audio version was that I still have not really coped with a lot of the damage. And, you know, I think that, you know, we all have techniques in coping. Denial is one of those techniques. And as long as we look at those techniques as phases into the next section of enlightenment about yourself, then I think, you know, we do what we do to get by. So I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, you know what, I'm really curious about the process of putting, you know, creating the audiobook and how difficult or challenging that might have been for you. I mean, it's one thing to write the book, but actually having to put it in audio format in your voice, and I guess go into a studio every day and recite it, you know, tell us a little bit about that process and what was that like for you?
Well, I tried to get out of it at first because, you know, it is one of the formats that I'm asked for the most often is an audio version. And so we did a beta test. The Made for Success Publishing has been very, very good to me, and they've really dotted their I's across their T's with my audience, and they wanted to know from them if they would be okay with me having actors act the parts, and the resounding answer was absolutely not. So I kind of was in the situation where I knew I had to do this. It was something that I was encouraged by my, you know, by therapists that it would be good for me as a cleansing kind of thing. So I did not practice prior to going in. I just did it in one take pretty much because I just knew that if I had any opportunity, I don't know, if I read it and then I would have to go back in, I wanted it to be real. I wanted it to be in the moment as I had originally written it. So there were pieces of the book that I had not seen in a long time. I mean, so a lot of those chapters are really raw, and I think that's why they submitted it for nomination for that award.
Fantastic. Yeah, so you're saying you went into the studio one day and cut the whole audio.
Well, we had two full days. You know, we cut the book in half. I mean, you know, in record time we were done. I mean, for me it was one emotional experience. I mean, it was a week of hell. I mean, as much as there were 2 days of recording, there were many days of me just sitting in a room by myself and kind of dealing with the fact that I had to be my mom for a minute.
Oh, wow.
You know?
That's tough.
Because I had to. It was tough because it really was me having to humanize her because she is a human and she was suffering to be doing the things she was doing. She you know, was suffering far more than I ever have or ever will. And that is a piece of the healing process that had not occurred prior to me reading it. So as I read it, I empathized with my mom. In a real human, wow, you must have been suffering pretty hard to have abused me like that, right?
Yeah, wow, that's incredible. So, and that, you know, so. Yeah, and that is so true because a mentally balanced person wouldn't even think of doing the things that she did to you. So I find it that's great that you were able to sort of have that revelation through the whole process. And I'm sure it was
right,
a hard.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I think what happened was as I was reading the chapters one after the other, because when I originally wrote the book, the chapters were not in that order. So when I actually read the chapters in the order that, you know, in the order that they wound up, it really became clear that my mom, you know, had started out with some amount of rationale around her conformist behavior. And then at some point, you know, it got out of control, and her insecurities about herself got out of control. And at some point, we all have a choice to let insanity in. And, you know, I believe the devil pretty much to let the devil in. But with her insecurities and her doubt, you know, as much as they were Catholics, I don't think that she, you know, was actively faithful and trusting in God and her unique path. So she would look to all sorts of societal, you know, rules and constructs as her map and her road guide, as opposed to, you know, a unique relationship with God. So that definitely became clear as I read the book out loud in studio.
Excellent. Now you had mentioned to me offline that this whole process actually deepened your belief in God and brought you closer to God. Can you explain that a little bit to
Absolutely.
Audience?
Yes. You know, I had a lot of anger, a lot of really bad feelings about the church, and because I knew that there were people within the church who knew what was going on and either turned a blind eye or whatever. And, you know, I've matured a lot. I've matured a lot. I realize that, you know, there are people who, you know, are ignorant in every group there is out there. And that has no bearing on my relationship with a God that brought me the toilet paper people. He brought his little saviors, you know. He brought this distraction. He brought, you know, my ability to write about it. He gave me this child abuse experience so that I could experience empathy and I would be able to communicate that and help to heal people. And reading the book really kind of really solidified that with me, that, you know, this is my opportunity to really, you know, I don't know, finally heal from some wounds I didn't think I'd ever heal from.
Yeah, that's excellent. And I think a lot of times, you know, I'll just make this comment, you know, a lot of times, and I'm not disparaging organized religion, but I think for a lot of people it becomes about, they lose sight of what it's really all about, which is that personal relationship with God.
Right. So it's what happens when you're on the street, you're homeless now, you run away from home, you know, your mom has done these awful things that, you know, you can't even begin to really, you don't want to talk about it, so you're in crazy amounts of delusion. So
yeah.
What do you do? Like, you're sitting on cement, and it's cold, and you're hungry, and you need to take the liners out of, you know, McDonald's, like, trash bins so that you don't get cold. And you look up to the sky, and you say to God, help me. Make it clear. Why did this happen? And you start, you're forced to be social with people. I'm not a very social person. So, you know, it forced me to get along. It forced me to listen to other stories. It forced me to understand nature better, you know, and in all of these beautiful ways. And, you know, I've really had to make a decision that I'm going to talk about my experience in, you know, wonderful, beautiful ways. I've seen things that, you know, I've seen and experienced things I never would have experienced had I not been homeless, right? So I don't think that's always a bad thing. And a lot of kids are advised, you know, that, oh, being homeless is the worst thing in the world. No, it's not. If you know how to be homeless and you know how to be resourceful, it's better than staying home and being raped by your parents.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's scary, but, you know, that's the truth. And, you know, that's another hard part of, you know, writing a book like this is, you know, I am in a situation where I have to talk about things that people get uncomfortable about. They don't want to talk about this dirty stuff, you know.
Right.
So the audiobook was really, the audiobook is, you know, it's a sign of the times. People are really not reading as much. They really want to be entertained. And so, you know, I did not do it to be entertaining. I did it to, you know, to be my mom in those scenes and for it to be scary, and it is. There's nothing, you know, funny about it.
Wow.
Or entertaining,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So.
No, and I've read it. Believe me, I was, you know, I felt like I was punched in the stomach, you know, just reading the words on paper, so I can't even imagine how powerful the audiobook must be, which I'm planning to get and listen to. But Terry, like, how has the reaction been to the audio from other abuse survivors? I mean, do they seem to gravitate towards the audio version? Does that resonate with them?
No, I mean, to be really honest, you know, the people that I aim to touch are people who cannot afford even the book, to be honest with you. So, you know, people who are, you know, are people who are educators or people who are in the medical health fields that are advocating to child abuse survivors are in a position where they can buy the book and distribute that book to their patients. So I found that that is kind of what's happening with that. But there is a comic book that's being done, and the comic book is going to be distributed all over the place. And we'll get into the hands of the homeless teens and the people I really intend to help and heal. And that was really a miracle. That was a miracle when this illustrator from California, who I didn't even know, his name's Keith Kern, was like, hey, I want to do the very first superhero who goes after child abusers, and teaches teens how to take care of themselves. So that was really cool. So, you know, I really kind of released a lot of my fears and my worries about my own path and my own journey to God. And, you know, He does answer if you're willing to listen.
And, you know, and he's working through you to help other people here. Now, Terry, let's talk a little bit about your humanitarian work. Do you, you know, how does that happen? Do you go out and talk to groups in person? You know, tell us a little bit about it.
What was that? I'm sorry, I lost you there.
I'm sorry, what was
Hello?
That?
Oh, my connection is bad. I did not get the first part of that question.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Just tell us a little bit about your humanitarian work and what that entails. And is it mainly in person, speaking with groups? Do you meet with people one-on-one? You know, how do you reach out and help others who have been through similar situations?
I mean, a lot of young adults are, you know, people who reach out to me online, and I get a lot of email. I get a lot of Facebook mail in particular, and I get a lot of response from my blog. So I've been really surprised at, you know, the feedback from my blog, because I never really believed in blogging, and I didn't understand, you know, why that was necessary. And, you know, so online has really been the major mode. But then I have people who reach out to me for other causes, like the book I Trusted Him. So I had a mom whose daughter was murdered last February who, you know, felt that her daughter had had some amount of child abuse history that led to her being murdered and wanted me to write about it. And so, you know, I kind of embarked on that for a little while. So when I travel the country, I'll have people like Soul Food Books here in Redmond, Washington. Amira Sarah has been absolutely instrumental in, you know, introducing me to people who need to hear my message of hope. And I'm thinking about doing toilet paper people workshops where I teach people how to make toilet paper people as a way of distracting themselves from things. So, you know, that's kind of that's the going plan right now, yeah.
Excellent. And I want to, since you mentioned your blog, Cherry, let's go ahead and give out the blog address, cherrytigress.blogspot.com, correct?
Right. And the other one is toiletpaperpeople.blogspot.com. And if you type in cherrytigress.com, that goes to my blog as well. And the two are separated. One is really having to do with child abuse and child abuse-related issues, you know, and I've really tried to keep it to that. And then Cherry Tigress is kind of, you know, it's really more all-encompassing. It has to do with my music and just my overall thoughts about, you know, life.
And it's
for whoever's
interested
in hearing about it. Thank you.
It's a beautiful blog. And Cherry, since you mentioned your music, I mean, you're so multi-talented. Just let our listeners know about some of the other things that you do.
I worked early on with Sylvia Massey, who produced Prince and Tool and System of a Down to create the three songs that are up on my various players. All three are about child abuse. You probably wouldn't know it just hearing it from the outward listening, but they are all about control, and that's really at the root of the things I talk about, are humans trying to control other humans. And, you know, there's no accident that, you know, musicians use music as a way of coping and healing. Without music, I definitely would not have survived. You know, I reference music so much in my book. I'm looking forward to, you know, doing a festival where I can actually have those musicians come and perform and, you know, and do that, because they were so healing for me. So music has definitely been part of my language. I'm a singer, so I do vocal arrangement and that kind of thing. And I'm currently working with Shaq in Seattle, and he is someone who does electronic dance music, and we're putting my vocals on some of those kinds of songs. So, you know, it's a language like any other. It was just a necessary, it's always been a necessary language for me. And I'm looking forward to getting the album done. So that should be done by the end of the year.
Oh, that's exciting. Very exciting.
Yeah, it's really exciting. Yeah.
Fantastic. Now, Cherry, we were talking before we went online, and this is a phenomenon, sort of a new media phenomenon that we're all pretty well versed in. We see it everywhere, and that is the selfie. But for you and others who have been through traumatic experiences, selfies have a whole different meaning. So explain to us a little bit about that.
Well, I started noticing that I really enjoy taking selfies, and a lot of my friends and my audience, they laugh at how many selfies I take and how often I change them on my Facebook page. But as I started delving down deeper into it, and I read that study about apparently selfie taking is linked to mental illness, and I just, that didn't sit well with me, because, you know, taking selfies for me has been a hugely helpful and healing experience, because it's a way of self-identifying that I did not have an opportunity to do when I was a child. I don't have happy birthday pictures or Halloween pictures or any of those things. So, you know, my ability to identify with myself is done through pictures. And, you know, I just kind of started noticing, you know, just I feel really great after doing it. I feel more at peace with myself. And then I started teaching people how to take selfies. And the more I started teaching people, the more I would hear back from them. They would say, oh, my gosh, you know, this was actually really fun. I learned stuff about myself and about my look and about my moods and about my presence that gave me a confidence I never had before. So, and that was just kind of, you know, I really think that people who've been, you know, who've suffered from traumatic past, it's kind of nice to have a new chance to rediscover yourself and, you know, create a new you. I mean, put on a costume, change your makeup, right? Like, change your location. I mean, you get to control the outcome of your sense of self. Whereas in the child abuse cases, you know, we didn't have that opportunity as a kid to define ourselves. So I did this little blog post called Me, Myselfie, and I, and, you know, my publisher is encouraging me to actually do a book about it and how to actually take the perfect selfie. And I'm considering it. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, that's excellent. I hope you do that. So did that come about sort of just spontaneously? You know, somebody saw your selfies and you just, that led to you?
No.
Kind of...
Yeah, Made for Success Publishing, I believe, they are the ones who actually did all of Zig Ziglar stuff, and I've been doing a lot of memes with the different quotes from my book, and I think that those were picked up on Google or something like that. So they saw these memes, and they were like, wow, this is an interesting message, and they said, we'd really like to do the audiobook for you, and they've just been extremely generous. And then they saw, you know, my writings. I'm writing a book called I Had This Thought Once that we're releasing in the next week or so. And I realized that while I wrote a memoir about child abuse, you know, I'm a writer. I like writing stories. I like provoking thought. I like aggravating change. And so those things are, I've been really fortunate that the right eyes have seen my writing. I mean, it's just been, you know, that's God. I mean, I have no one else to say for that. I mean, I without that kind of, you know, belief, I don't believe that, you know, my writing ever would have been picked up. So I just believe in doing what is your true purpose. And the quicker we can find that out, you know, the better it is for humankind, really. Because we have a lot of damaged people out there in the world. We have a lot of people who are delaying their own purpose because they're healing from wounds that, you know, that, yeah, they're not fair. Wounds are never fair. How do we get out from underneath them? And, you know, how do we figure out what our true talents are? So, you know, the Pro Paper People Foundation is my way of helping homeless teens and homeless young adults find out who they are outside of child abuse. Because I'm such a different person. You know, when I cut out the conversation about what happened to me when I was little, I see this person who, you know, is just so different than this victim, right? I mean, I was the victim for 10-plus years, and that wears out its welcome, you know, when you hit your 20s and you're still talking about it and, you know, you're still repeating, you know, some self-destructive habits, whatever those are, you know. That's all a delay of purpose, and, you know, God did not give us these stories and these awful situations just to lay down and roll over. You know, he gave us these stories to rebound from, and we all need to find out what language we are supposed to communicate in so that we can find peace, because there is peace, and I know it because, it, you know, it's happening for me. You know, I wasn't this person 10 years ago. I mean, you know, it took a lot of hard work, and, you know, I definitely wounded people along the way. Because I think that people who've been through child abuse are the ones who are most at risk of abusing others, because they're in pain. That's, you know, they don't know any other way. And so if we can just, like, break that cycle, and that's such a cliche, isn't it? Break the cycle of self-abuse, first of all. So it's love of self, the selfie thing. You know, yes, it could be narcissistic. It could be, you know, I've been accused of all sorts of things like that. But I think that, you know, yeah, I have a very healthy self-love that allows me to achieve my purpose in God's name. So everybody is capable of that. Yeah, amen. Everybody is capable of that.
I'll give you a hallelujah, Sherry. Yes.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. It's true. I mean, and anyone who, like, seeks to give you 5 million excuses as to why their story was so bad and they can't, Are you kidding me? I'm the last person on earth you wanted to have that conversation with.
Yes.
Right? I mean, we don't have to be lazy. I mean, and I think a lot of people just don't believe that there's light at the end of the tunnel. And I found love. I can't even believe it. I asked God, I said, am I ever going to know love, like ever in my entire life? Am I always going to be so untrusting? Am I always going to be so difficult? You know, like, because I'm choosing to be difficult. I'm choosing to have this story delay my ability to get close with someone. And, you know, he has worked extraordinary miracles in my life. And, you know, I can't wait to share that with other child abuse survivors who need to see the hope. And they need to see it for themselves. Right? They need to see me. They need to see me in person. There's no way, you know, God has blessed me in so many ways. And, you know, I'm excited about the journey. That's why I signed all my books, Here's to the Journey. You know, Journey was an album I listened to. It was a great album I listened to for, you know, my sophomore, my junior year in high school. And it's a journey of our own making, and we get to decide if it's sunny when it's raining or not. So, I don't know. That's just my take on it.
Yeah, well, you know, you've rewritten your story, and I agree with you. I think just in general, people tend to hold on to the past for much lesser reasons than what, you know, than something like what you went through. You know, they choose
right.
to be victims rather than saying, okay, that happened. Let me find some meaning in it, and let me choose to allow it to make me a stronger, better, you know, self-adjusted person. You know, somebody that wants to become stronger as a result of the experience and to help other people. You know, kind of like the way you did.
Right, right. And to have the, you know, I'm going to say balls, but I guess I mean courage, you know, to stand up and say that, you know, the resources aren't there for homeless young adults. The resources haven't been there for a really long time. And if we don't learn how to get along with the outside world, what is the next choice? I mean, you know, I believe that our system judges young teenagers and call them at risk when they're not at risk. They're not at risk teenagers. They're at risk of loving you to death because they had parents who were awful and all they want is love, right? They're hungry. They don't want to be, you know, I just believe a lot of our bullies are child abuse survivors who don't know how to handle things. And, you know, until our resources are really willing to focus on child abuse, we're going to continue to have, you know, school shootings. I know. I don't have any basis for my belief that you know, school shootings are because kids came from child abuse, but I think it's a huge component. You know, these are ticking time bombs, right? These are ticking time bombs who, you know, they're picked out by mom and dad. There are no resources out there to help them. They're starving, hungry, right? So what are they going to do? They're going to go use drugs, right? Okay, so now they're, I mean, it's just layer after layer after layer of baloney. And how do they get out from underneath it? And I think that they need a new start. They need people who believe in them and people who don't judge them as harshly. And they need to get fed because a brain doesn't work unless you're fed. And it's like, I see this, and I just, like, my heart, like, breaks for the amount of judgment that is on people who, you know, who don't have families or who come from that kind of dysfunction, because PTSD is one of those things where, you know, I couldn't unload groceries in my kitchen with anyone in the room because I had this memory that I didn't realize I had the memory of my mom dropping cans of soup on me when she was unloading the groceries. And so I would go through all sorts of behavior tactics to make sure that I either started a fight with my loved one before we got home from the grocery store so that they wouldn't be in the kitchen, right? I mean, so the human mind does many, many different things to prevent, you know, harming oneself, right, or being in the line of harm. And, you know, I didn't realize I was doing those things until my late 20s. And so with post-traumatic stress disorder, you know, we have a huge amount of you know, not just soldiers. We're talking about people here in this country who, you know, have real symptoms and you know, health. They don't have health insurance. They don't have anyone caring about them, right? And they don't even know half the time why they're reacting that way. So you've got a society who is very quick to label them, you know, mentally, you know, mentally unsound when they're probably the sanest people there are out there. Right? They're just reacting to really terrible memories. And I would love, I mean, on a public platform, if I'm given that opportunity, which, you know, I feel that it's moving in that direction, I would talk about a closer look at post-traumatic stress disorder and medicine that can help. I mean, the science behind medicine that can help with those kinds of things so that, you know, child abuse survivors can actually have a real shot at life as opposed to being a hair trigger, you know, which is, you know, that's what I feel, is I feel like, you know, we need resources in place to provide that support. We need science in place that's going to provide the support, right? And we need a general public that's empathetic to what's going on for a huge amount of people. I mean, I couldn't believe the outpouring of email that I've received, you know. Stories worse than mine. I mean, it's heartbreaking, you know. And then I say, you know what? It doesn't have to be heartbreaking. What are you doing about it? Yeah, it sucks. Yeah, it sucked that this happened. What are you going to do about it? Right?
Right.
So, that kind of probably sounds really aggressive, but, you know, we have to think that way because I refuse to live a life that, you know, doesn't have hope in it and doesn't have joy and the opportunity of a life outside of what that awful woman did. That's her business. That's her baggage. That's her nightmare. It doesn't have to be mine. It doesn't have to be anyone else's, you know? Like, I found at the end of writing Toilet Paper People that I was becoming just as toxic as she was. I mean, not just as, you know what I'm saying? I felt that I was starting to exhibit some of the same bitter characteristics. And, you know, and then you start attracting bitter, and you start attracting ugly, and...
Yes.
I just like, I'm not going to do that. You know?
Yep. So. Like attracts like. Yeah, and you know, the thing is too, I mean, by holding on to it, as painful as it is, and I know, you know, I guess it's easy for someone who hasn't been through these similar experiences, but just echoing your words, Cherry, it's like, you know, you can choose to allow this person to continue to control and ruin your life, or you can say, okay, that happened, yeah, it sucked, it was horrible, but I'm out of there. Now I am in control of my life, and I'm going to write a different story for myself.
Right. And you have to go back to the day that you decided to take your life back. So every time I sit and I talk about, wow, what a different person I would have been, and, you know, life isn't easy for me right now. A lot of people, like, get the misconception that, you know, my life is easy now because I wrote some book about child abuse. That's not true. I have to remember the day that I walked out the door. You know, it was fall. These three words moved me to my destiny every single day. I remember I was so excited. It was day one of the rest of my life. And, you know, I'm not 42. I'm 22 or 22. I'm 10 years. I was 16 years old when I left. So I felt like I was a one-year-old the day I left. You know what I mean? And if you think about it that way, and, you know, you position yourself in a way that, you know, I don't talk about my past when I'm not, you know, having interviews or when I'm not talking to child abuse survivors. I've had to stop talking about it because you just keep repeating the memory over and over again. And I had to become a new person. And I think it's important for people to have that opportunity. And people don't give themselves that opportunity. It's a lot easier to blame. Like, I could sit here and blame my mom all day long and say, oh, well, no, I didn't get anything done today because, oh, my mom, that was how many years ago? Oh, my God. Right? I let her have that much power for how long? Right? This is someone who has done nothing with her life. I'm sorry. I'm going to say that, and I feel really good about it. She's done nothing with her life. She hasn't impacted nearly the amount of people I have impacted by, you know, standing up and going, okay, God, what do you want to do today, right? And that's our choice, and we must make that choice, or we become, you know, we become part of the problem in a hurry, you know. And I refuse to be part of the problem, you know.
Good for you. Now I agree wholeheartedly, Cherry. I want to ask you though, what I mean, if anyone listening suspects or know, you know, that there's child abuse going on, say like with a neighbor or a relative. I mean, do you have any advice for people as to somebody who really wants to help, maybe they suspect that there's a child suffering and they're not sure what to do? I mean, do you have any advice for that person?
Yes, I have a ton of advice. Number one, make sure, it depends on the age of the child, first of all. I think that well-meaning people do more harm than good by getting involved on the, you know, right away. Like, I remember, you know, I had well-meaning people reach out to me when I was at school and teachers were fired. There was a teacher that sought to help me and she was fired when she kind of brought up the red flag. So it's like, you know, it depends on what you're dealing with, but it's important that you validate the child's feelings, that child has some amount of contact information. Like when I ran away from home, I had my girlfriend Amy's phone number, you know, taped to the bottom of my backpack, right? Because she knew. So if you know, you make sure that child has a way out if they decide to leave, and you don't push that child, right? I mean, that's something that, you know, you can get in a lot of trouble for that. You know, I'm not a therapist. I'm not someone who, you know, I just know what worked for me. And DSHS is as much as they do a lot of great things for our community, they are deluged with cases that, you know, every day, and they just don't have the resources to really help children. So I would say that I wasn't really able to be helped until I had run away from home at the age of 16. And even then, you know, I didn't want to talk about it. I didn't want to talk about the abuse. I wanted to live as normal of a life as possible. So I think you try to not judge the child. You try to make sure that child has a number or an address. You know, in today's day and age, technology is really helpful to that end. I mean, I grew up in the 80s, right? So it was a lot more difficult to get a hold of people. You know, there was no email like, you know, what we see today. But, you know, you run a risk when, I mean, a lot of families very, you know, I understand when families don't want to get involved in that drama. And I just don't think that you ever know what's going on behind closed doors. If you suspect something, you know, you give it love. I mean, it's terrible that this stuff happens. And I don't believe overall that we'll ever end humans hurting humans. We just have to make sure that we don't create a society of victims. We provide them a way out. And so I had a way out through my girlfriend Amy, and her family was very, very generous to take me in my last year of high school. And that's not often the case, right? There aren't a lot of families out there willing to do that and take that risk. So, yes, you can report it to all the different authorities. You know, I have resources on my website, 1-800 numbers for incest survivors in particular. I find I'm involved with a lot of those groups because of the stuff my mom did with me. And just understanding and really putting those children or those young adults in contact with groups like that where they don't feel so alone. RAIN is another one. Right, like it's all the time families are kicking kids out for gender problems, right? I mean, it's tragic, especially around the holidays, right? I mean, that's when you really need to be on high alert. I mean, be the house that all of, you know, these young college students, I remember going to tons of Thanksgivings where, you know, there were tons of people who didn't have family where they could go because, you know, they were kicked out or, you know, for one reason or another. So open your life up, I would say, is the best way. Is, you know, I think that we get really, really used to technology and hiding behind closed doors and, you know, living our private lives. And you know, I think we need to open up and we need to take some risks because there's so much reward in forcing yourself to be social and forcing yourself to, you know, like just... But, you know, providing that resource for a teenager or a young adult is just, it's so valuable to them, you know, because, I mean, suicides, I mean, in this particular demographic of people are huge. I mean, it's just, it's breathtaking. And, you know, I mean, I will be honest and say I've had my own run-ins with, you know, the thought of suicide until, you know, I had some great therapy. You know, I've run into some really great people. Carrie Fuller is one And Jerry Bange is another who, you know, they really talked some sense into a life that could have been really chaotic because of what had happened to me. And instead, you know, they opened their lives up every single day. And I guess I would say open your life up, be empathetic, stop judging. You know, things are a lot worse out there, and we should start giving back. So that, without sounding too preachy, right? This is my opportunity, though, right?
Yes, for sure. Now, Cherry, you told me you have a tour coming up. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's just kind of formulating right now. You know, I think that you and I were talking around the time I was setting something up last year. And unfortunately, having, you know, written the books, it kind of puts a target on my back in terms of people who show up at events. And so while I'm working on establishing management and that kind of thing, I've kind of postponed a lot of personal appearances until that's in place. But I have two deals on the table right now that I'm considering, which will kind of put a layer of buffer between me and the general public, which has been really important for me, because I have a lot of triggers. I have a lot of, you know, trust issues, and you know, there are people who victimize those who write books about, you know, awful things like that. They think, oh wow, she was a victim once, right? Kind of mentality. So I've had, you know, I just for me and my own well-being, I've decided to wait until I sign one of those deals. So probably within the next few weeks, I'll know a little bit more about whether or not I'm going to be doing the audio tour for the audiobook. Barnes & Noble in West Seattle will be one of the places that, you know, will be first on my list. And I'm excited about it.
Well, you should be. It's very, very exciting. I'm so happy for all of the success that you're now experiencing and all the lives, more importantly, all the lives that you're touching and helping. Phenomenal.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been eye-opening. I mean, you know, I think that it's just interesting to see how. One of the things that I participated in was a panel at MedHat. It's a business in Tacoma. They were really generous to have us while we talked about teenage homelessness and child abuse as it relates to, you know, our homeless population, and what are the numbers, and how can we teach, you know, these people who don't have parents and don't have a normal life how to be normal, right? Like, that's, there are just so many challenges, and just to see how many people came to that event and were interested and wanted to be part of the conversation, and, you know, it wasn't about what was in it for them. It was, you know, how can we have a meaningful conversation about, you know, people who are people and want a chance just like anybody else, but, you know, they don't have money to, you know, do all the things necessary to keep themselves well. I mean, you know, you have all sorts of health-related issues, right? I mean, so to give you an example, my toes are a great example. You know, I didn't have a car for some time, and, you know, my toes are very, very, you know, this is for a subject. My mom, you know, done some pretty significant damage to my toes. So, you know,
I
have a
that.
Physical. Yeah, that's not
oh,
a very
awful.
Fun chapter, but, you know, it's just, so I have a physical issue due to, you know, something that wasn't my fault. And yet, you know, I can't walk long distances. I mean, and so that triggers, you know, oh my gosh, if I don't have a car, what does that mean? I mean, that means I'm at the mercy of, you know, all sorts of strangers. I mean, I didn't have the luxury of getting to know people in my high school, really. I had my girlfriend, Amy, but outside of that, I was extremely socially awkward. And so it's just, those are the kinds of things. So when I talk to young adults who are, you know, kind of on the brink of losing everything that they have worked to get. And, you know, when I talk to those people, I'm one of those people. We're all one of those people. We're, you know, we're a lot closer to being those people than anyone ever really wants to talk about. And that's what intrinsically makes this discussion, you know. I'm really, really, you know, grateful to you, Daria, for, like, opening this up. you know, for this kind of conversation, because a lot of people just, you know, they don't really want to talk about it. It's not fun. The selfie stuff is fun, but.
Well, it's my pleasure, Cherry, and I'm so sorry. Time just goes by so quickly when I'm talking to you. I just enjoy interviewing you so much. So you just have like a minute left. Is there anything else you'd like our listeners to know before we end the interview today?
Sure, absolutely. I guess what I'd like to say is there's a movement, well, not a movement. I've just heard a lot about child abuse survivors being encouraged to forgive their parents for child abuse when the parents have not asked the child for their forgiveness. While I have extreme faith in God, I just think that sometimes when we're used to safe lives, it's easy for us to talk like we're therapists when we're not. And so when you're talking to someone who you think might be a victim of child abuse, you know, tread with care, because, you know, I believe forgiving parents is for child abuse when they haven't actually come to the table and asked for it is giving them a license to abuse again. I think, you know, victims have been through enough already. You know, we don't need the guilt trip. If we get to heal our way. It's the only control we have in our lives. So just, you know, empathy and love and light. I mean, and God bless. Thank you so much for having me.
Well said. Cherry, it was my pleasure, honey. And I'm looking forward, you know, keep me informed of all of your future successes and what's going on with the book. And I'm sure we'll be bringing you back here on WriteStream again soon.
Oh, thank you so much. You take care.
Okay, you too. God bless you. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. All right, everyone, that was the wonderful Cherry Tigress. Please check out her blog, cherrytigress.blogspot.com, and toiletpaperpeople.com. I am telling you, it is one powerful book, and I am going to get the audio because I'm intrigued, and I really want to get the book in audio format. But anyway, okay, you guys know what's coming next. Stay tuned for the second hour. We've got the Right Wing Riot with the Luminaries of Liberty, Scary Smart, Ms. Always Right, and the Prince of White Bread. Right after Madison Rising and the Star-Spangled Banner. So stay tuned, everybody. As soon as I can get to the right button, yes, I will play Madison Rising, Star-Spangled Banner, and I will see you back here for WriteStream Tuesday next week at 1 p.m. Eastern.
Welcome to another edition of The Right Wing Riot with your hosts, the scary smart Jamie K. Wilson.
Every morning when I get late, should I go in and report to my boss?
The mysterious and alluring Ms. Always Right.
Do we think that this is going to start being as obviously stupid to everyone as it is to us?
And Griff Griffiths, who is the Prince of Whiteness. Let's get this riot started!
Did you see on Twitchy today the NSA was admitting that, they've seen the nudes. They saw the nudes before they came out.
They saw what?
Yeah, the celebrity nude pics. What?
Are you serious? They didn't admit it.
Well, they pretended to admit it. They're getting pretty cute on their Twitter channel.
The lack of shame and concern for being judged is really frightening the more it comes out of these government bodies.
Gosh, I hadn't thought about it that way. I mean, it was really funny, but it is kind of creepy, too, isn't it?
They don't care, who knows. What are you going to do about it?
I guess. They'll know before you do it anyway, so.
Well, I have not seen any of the pictures. I do not intend to.
I'm not interested. I don't care.
No. All right, ladies, I'm back. How's this sound?
Oh, that's better. That's
much
better.
Yeah, very good.
Odd, you guys are broken up on my end, but I can make out your pithy comments. What did I miss out? We were talking about not seeing something.
We're talking about naked women.
I could talk about that for a long time. What are we specifically discussing?
You hung up and called back, so you kind of missed. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
It's over
now. Well, but you know what? Moving on from the eternally interesting topic of naked women. You know what today is?
What's today?
Today is Tuesday.
Tuesday?
Of course it is.
Yes, that's right. There's a new Truesberry up over at LibertyIslandMag.com. It's tasty, and as usual, it's fair and objective and kind to all parties involved. Wouldn't you say that, Ms. Always Right?
Absolutely, just like the original Doonesbury cartoon strips were.
He is our model in so many ways. You scoffed, Miss Scary Smart?
Oh, I'm not scoffing at all. I'm just saying you can look at it as we're bringing balance to things.
We're the yang to his yin.
Okay. We may need to change our website now to Yin Day. However... Ms. Scary Smart was MIA all weekend. We think she was at Niagara Falls. We are not sure.
I wish.
didn't work out, but Captain America is well, we hope.
Captain America is very well. Thank you.
Wonderful.
We hope to have him join us on the show someday.
I do too. We have some great discussions. I think he would have a lot of fun.
That would be awesome.
That really would be fun. We'll have to work on that. Igor, you have your orders. Are you ready to go? Okay. He always talks when he writes. I don't know why he does that, but I think that means he's going to follow up on that for us.
I think he put it in his day runner.
He did. He'll pack it in his trunk for later, I'm sure.
Ah, very good.
Okay. All right. Let's see. So let's get right to the important news of the day. Obama hit got an eagle this weekend.
Oh,
that
is pretty
fantastic. Important.
Oh, wow. I feel better about America already. That is awesome.
Yeah, yeah. That's
so
the only
eagle. He got an eagle just like wind turbines get eagles, right?
He got a golf eagle.
That's different.
Okay.
That is,
you
in fact.
I guess you could get it, if you hit it right, you could get an eagle with a golf ball.
You could. Yes. Wasn't it Jimmy Carter took out a rabbit with a low drive?
No, he shot his neighbor's cat, which I think is one of the most bizarre stories in the annals of presidential afterlife. But he shot his neighbor's
terrific.
Cat.
Wow.
That is terrific.
Okay, there's a joke that's dying to be made there, but I'm just going to stop because Daria's got her hand hovering over the disconnect button right now.
Yeah, probably.
No jokes about presidents getting their neighbor's cat, if you know what I'm saying, Bill Clinton.
Wow.
Are you referring to what goes on in Chappaqua now? Come on.
No.
You are all over the place. You were mixing up the killer rabbit with the Energizer. That's what you're doing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So.
Wow. And somehow cats are part of all that. But anyway, we digress.
Sorry.
Oh, that's all right. You're saving me from myself, so we all appreciate that. But in other presidential news, yet another American embassy has been borrowed, shall we say?
Appropriated.
Was
I the only one who got the Beverly Hillbillies vibe from the video?
I hadn't thought of that.
Wow.
Jumping in the cement pond.
I like how it's emerald green, too.
That just looks wonderful.
I mean, that's because, after all, hadn't we abandoned the embassy a month earlier or something? So it's not like it was maintained. Yeah, I'd have to worry about that, though.
So it was just redistribution of America's wealth to a deserving third world party. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that, Ms. Scary Smart?
Well, I mean, there's not that much to tell. They walked into the embassy that we had abandoned a month ago and decided that they were going to play. Apparently, they didn't do a whole lot of damage. They mostly were just, you know, using it as a crash pad, I guess.
It kind of looked like a frat party, almost.
It did look like a frat party. The only thing missing was the beer and the women. They didn't have a lot of women there, did they?
Well.
Yeah, that's why the Islamist frat parties are not as much fun, generally.
Probably not. No. Certainly not as interesting. But they did have a great time jumping from the second floor balcony into that swimming hole.
See, I was impressed by that. I wouldn't have tried
it. Yeah. You know, they had skills that we just didn't realize they actually possessed.
Formidable people. I do not blame us for, like, putting our tail between our legs and running away before they got there.
Yeah. I mean, guys can do cannonballs like that, you know that they're trouble.
Hells yeah. Jeez.
Wow. Another proud moment in Obama's presidential career, something that no doubt is going to be reflected
on.
Take
a moment to reflect on how the world's estimation of the United States has risen in these past 6 years.
How
good do we look?
Yeah, I mean, come on, Obama was going to... His list of promises is very long, but I'm sure the highlights are all the things he promised he'd do. The only thing I think he's actually done was fundamentally transform America. He's turning us into a third world dump.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably George Bush's fault as well.
I believe it still is.
Yeah.
Well,
so
if you look at it, if you look at it that way, the whole party in the embassy works. He's like the unpopular kid who had the party in his parents' house, except he couldn't get rid of all the partiers when they went wild.
It got out of control.
Exactly. Yeah. The only thing missing was the cake.
Oh,
wow.
That's funny. Too bad he can't call the cops and clear them out.
So
nobody
that
to
makes,
call.
We're the cops.
There's
yeah, unfortunately, we are the cops, and and they've stopped. We stopped taking those calls because
correct.
We're doing Muslim outreach instead.
Right.
So that makes Obama the McLovin of the diplomatic community.
Yep.
Okay, that's one obscure reference to the to a terrible film that had a very geeky guy in it that was trying to do anything, and he decided to name himself McLovin. Probably like Barry Sotero decided to name himself Barack Obama. But
that just screams out for a Photoshop name.
Can you
who?
Let's talk to our graphics person. And maybe she will do that for us. Igor, so contact graphics. We're going to do a Obama McLovin. Actually, during the first campaign, I referred to his team as O'Biden. That seemed to work, the Irish team there. The Black Irish, in fact. But, but anyway.
Wow.
So... So another embassy circles the drain, America pulls out, and Obama continues to golf. But I don't know if anybody else heard it, but apparently it's racist to keep mentioning how much he's golfing.
What?
Yeah.
That's racist?
That,
how did that get to be racist?
I
can't follow all these.
Well, you know, that gives me this, reminds me of something I was thinking of in the shower, where all my good thoughts come. Typically about naked women, but that's another story.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, in the liberal world, if we're talking about things like political correctness, if we're talking about – basically, if we're talking about anything that the liberals and the progressives want to tell you it's wrong, you find out really fast it's like a game of Calvin Ball. Does anybody remember Calvin Ball?
You are losing me with all of these obscure references. You're killing me today. What's Calvin Ball?
Okay, I'm doing my best to be better than Dennis Miller at Obscurity. In the comic strip Calvin and Hobbes, which was about a five-year-old boy and his imaginary friend, who, when no one was around, was a stuffed tiger, but when people were around, he was a stuffed tiger, and that is Hobbes. But when no one was around, he became a fully functional larger-than-life tiger who was very wise, often wiser than the boy. And one of the games they played was called Calvin Ball, which involved making up the rules on the spot every time. So the liberals have institutionalized Calvin Ball.
So it's
racism
ball, yeah.
Well, not everything. So they'll tell, because whenever they want to bludgeon you, they'll tell you, that's racist. Okay, we live in a racist, sexist society, and they'll say that when they're shaking the finger of doom at you, and then they'll turn around and say that you know white men are bad, and
right,
and then you say to yourself, gosh, that sounds like a generalization, and you know generalizations of an entire group are, shall we say, racist, and they go,
no, they're not racist.
There's an exception. You know, because white men have white privilege, and it's everything they tell you has an exception and a different rule, and it's Calvin Ball completely.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree, Scary Smart?
I would, and I like the way you went from cannonballs to Calvin Ball.
Mm.
That really works nicely. Yeah,
It's just a true professional. I have to make a confession here, and I think the guys at the NSA already know it because they're looking through my webcam right now.
Yeah.
But you know, we're new at this internet radio thing here at the Right Wing Riot, and I haven't quite got my system down. Like for instance, the Riot Girls had to tell me my sound was bad. But every episode, I try to do it a little differently. I'm trying to find my groove, my thing. Like for instance, today, I'm doing this episode completely naked, except for a welder's helmet, just to see if it gives me that special something I need to push the show over the top.
Oh, might do it. That might do it. Are you, I can see how that would give you a lot more confidence.
It does, and if this doesn't work, because I'm taking notes, I've got an Excel spreadsheet, and I'm going to put in an Access database later, but I think next week I'm going to be wearing Playtex rubber gloves on my feet, just to see if that helps too.
And nothing else.
Well, I'm not so sure.
Just to make my kids laugh.
Who hasn't? Who hasn't?
I guess, yeah.
We blow rubber gloves up and make them into chickens here. That's what we do.
Well, yeah.
So I don't know about you guys. That's how we handle the rubber gloves, okay? Whatever.
There are many things you can do with rubber gloves. They're interesting things.
We were by the water yesterday, and under a dock, I saw a pale human hand floating up towards the surface of the water, and I immediately, I freaked out and got all the children away quickly. And it was somebody's rubber glove.
Apparently, they can be used to randomly prank mothers at the park.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's great.
It was amazing.
That is great.
Yeah. It's one of those little treats life throws your way.
Okay. Well, you know, so we lost the embassy in Libya, but now for some good news. And don't we all need a little good news out of the Middle East?
Goodness, yes, please.
Okay. Al-Qaeda's Syrian rebels attacked and surrounded a group of Filipino troops who were in the Golan Heights under the auspices of the UN peacekeeping mission there.
So they were submitting themselves to direction from the UN?
Direction is such a specific term when it comes to the UN.
command, if you will. No? All right, carry on.
Yeah, we do need to talk about the UN someday and the useless nations, because I was wondering, Scary Smart wanted to have her list of things that, I'm keeping track of Obama's failures. I was thinking, we could do the same thing with the UN, because I can't remember any time recently they've been effective at anything except child trafficking in the Congo.
I have a friend
They're
who
really
calls the...
Yeah.
I have a friend who calls
the
building...
No, go ahead.
I totally talked over you. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to say I have a friend that refers to their building as a whorehouse with flags.
Ooh. Wow.
Yeah.
I like that.
I think that's a little harsh, but there it is.
I think it'd be more interesting if it were actually a whorehouse with flags.
It would probably be more profitable to the United States, that's for sure.
That's
we could
very
tax
true.
It.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to go on. So
yeah,
these,
what happened?
These poor bastards somehow got roped into being under the control of the UN, and it's a little peculiar, because meanwhile the UN's in negotiation with the attacking Islamists, religion of peace people who are looking for some new heads to put on fences. So they're negotiating with them over 45 troops from Fiji. So I just had to sit for a minute and imagine there's these other poor bastards from a tropical island are now in the armpit of the Middle East, the desert, and then they're captured by people who want to cut their heads off and play soccer with them. So the Fijians were captured when the Islamists attacked, and then they give up their weapons. So the UN, apparently, their plan was, let's let the Islamists capture the Filipinos, and then they'll give us back the Fijians. I mean, this is a plan worthy of Obama, right there, in fact. So the Filipino commander...
I didn't know that you could just trade around Pacific Islanders like that.
Yeah.
It's like
team
where you pay one credit card bill with another credit card each month. You could do that with Pacific Islander troops that have been... open-hearted enough to place themselves under UN command. That's a brilliant idea. Just swap them every now and then.
Wow, it's like a Ponzi scheme with people.
Correct.
Yeah.
Well, the Filipino commander said, who apparently has a little more experience than perhaps the UN schmucks over in New York, he thought it over for I'm sure. Seconds at a time, and said, "The hell with this."
Yeah, what?
can I say something here? They
Please.
Clearly have never known Filipino soldiers. You do not mess with Filipino soldiers. You do not mess with Samoan soldiers.
I know that about
bad
Samoans.
Yeah, Filipinos are almost as bad.
I didn't know.
Oh, yeah.
Well, just a little... A brief history lesson. The Filipino soldiers were so tough during the Filipino insurrection in the early 1900s. The U.S. Army discovered that their basic revolver was ineffective to knock these guys down, and that's why they invented the .45.
Wow.
Right. So we have the Filipinos to thank for one of the finest handguns in the world.
How did people like that let themselves get into that position in the first place? Who suckered them in?
Boy, I'm guessing they voted Democrat.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, the Filipino general said hell no, and he said basically, look, you have. I'm sure it was a little more salty when he told his troops, but he explained it to the press as something along the lines of, we do not surrender our firearms and. They had no assurance of their safety after they did. And so obviously this guy was reading some newspapers and understood how the Islamists treat their prisoners. How many people have the ISIS killed, Scary Smart? I mean, we must be in the 100,000s by now.
Easily. Okay. At this point.
But they don't just kill them. They do it in methods... The most barbaric methods we've seen since medieval times, since the Dark Ages.
They don't kill. They don't murder. They slaughter. They do exactly the same thing the Nazis did.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's pretty horrifying.
Yeah.
To them, the world is the Jew. So.
Oh.
True. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Can't have that.
So.
I have to say another thing. Filipinos historically were very good headhunters too, and I guess ISIS didn't really understand that part.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I like this matchup.
Mm. Mm-hmm. I do too.
Yeah, we were doing that before you guys even thought of it. So.
Mm-hmm.
You should see what we do with the heads we chop off.
No kidding.
That's
right.
Funny.
Okay, give me a second here. I am I'm checking, doing a sound check. Okay, good. So the Filipinos then decide to put up a fight, which might. I don't know, maybe the Islamists aren't used to that because didn't a large number of the Iraqi army start throwing away their arms and uniforms and run? So they fought the rebels.
Yeah,
the Filipinos fought the rebels and eventually helped out of the siege, and I'm sure that's another interesting story that I didn't all have. But I just thought it was just, gosh, you know, you got to love the UN. Hey, we'll go into Rwanda, but we won't have enough troops, and we won't let them do anything to stop the slaughter.
Why are you there, then?
that is, I think the UN's operating philosophy, let's confuse motion for progress. You know, but
maybe they've redefined progress.
They
That's
certainly
another good
have.
Tactic. Yeah, so simply, yeah, you can just redefine something and make it work. That's right.
It's Calvin Ball one more time.
Yeah.
I may have to do something on that for the Right Wing Riot webpage. But if anybody got anything else on that, I can go right into another Islamist slam.
I don't know what else we can say.
I mean, I'm sorry, a discussion about you know, our friends the Islamists.
Please, be fair.
Oh, I will.
Don't be so jingoistic or whatever.
Oh.
I always saw you. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Colonial. There's got to be.
Yes,
there's
you are
so many...
imperialist and ethnocentric.
Thank you.
Yeah, I have a question. Has this been covered in the mainstream media? Do they not even want to cover successes like that?
God, no.
Well, I think if it was me, just seeing that line about they were going to swap one group of ethnic dusky. Post-colonials for another group of dusky ethnic post-colonials as if they weren't really of any value either way.
It's almost like that, yeah.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm thinking they may not have wanted to, you know, it would have been impolitic to mention that.
Well, I noticed they don't offer to swap out Belgian troops or anyone like that or French troops or anything. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. Well,
Those are
yes,
human beings, that's why, yeah.
No, that's true, and they're yeah. kind of pasty for the most part, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah,
it's only Americans, and especially conservative Republican Americans, who are worried about the pastiness of the individuals.
Right, we're racist, but they are enlightened.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, you know, and looking at those photos of those enlightened ISIS people having such a great time at the embassy, having pretty much that. That frat party you mentioned,
yeah.
I thought, you know, me and Igor, that was almost grammatical, wasn't it? It should actually be Igor and I, and it's spelled Igor, so it's Igor and I, did a little focus group testing because I think there's a niche market that we as creative people are missing. And we decided to go look for some approved Sharia flicks for today's Islamists. Because,
that is so nice of you guys.
I mean,
public
where, after a long day of beheadings and crucifixions and raping of nuns, where does a good Islamist go to unwind a little bit?
Because really, not everyone has a green swimming pool to jump into. Some Islamists are stuck in the desert. That's a good point. They deserve recreation as much as anyone.
You know, and in fact, they might be all out of nuns to rape. And you know, and you just,
they might have beheaded them all, and I think they still draw the line at necrophilia, or have they gotten over that as well? I don't recall.
I don't know. And if they are, the UN hasn't told us, and they won't tell us.
No one will tell us.
Yes, but together with my faithful production producer Igor, we did some focus testing on a group of the target audiences, and they were separated by gender. And here's just a few of the titles they particularly approved of. The Princess Child Bride. They liked The Good, the Bad, and the Jews. One Head Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. another one that they really kind of enjoyed, Taxi Bomb Driver. Let's see. And then I think the biggest favorite was Beach Party Beheading.
Good time.
Oh, there's another ball for you. They could play beheaded volleyball, you know? I mean, wow.
The fun never ends out there. My
wow.
Oh, my.
Those
oh
guys
my.
Know how to party. Holy
These guys
God.
Are green. They recycle, they reuse, they repurpose.
Wow.
Okay. But there
so
was
glad
one
that we got over looking at ourselves as superior or something.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Okay. There was one last title, though. We you know, Igor and I really thought it was going to be like a winner. And, you know, it had everything, including camels. And it was called There's Something About Muhammad. So that one they weren't so crazy about. But I'm going to start a crowdfunding campaign. And I think Beach Party Beheading was sort of the clear favorite.
That was the only thing missing from that embassy party. Again, though, we had the foresight to abandon the embassy last month, so a fact that was not reported at all. It's one of the many things I have learned listening to the Right Wing Riot.
And it's one of the many things we've learned listening from you, because I didn't know it had been abandoned either, but that is of a piece with the complete, you know, the moral fiber, the rectitude, the superiority, the standfastness that we've come to depend on Barack Obama to deliver.
And again, it feels so good to have our profile elevated once again in world opinion. Thank you. Thank you, Obama. Thank you.
And I'm sure the Iranians see this and they shudder with something that is not fear.
Anticipation.
Oh, boy. They must be wiping their mouths looking at that. And Ms. Always Right, you were suggesting we have to give a shout out to
some
other folks. It was
a while back. Somebody else did see the need for Sharia compliant entertainment, and anyone who wants to really have a good time should go to YouTube and look up The Sands of Passion, which is a Sharia compliant soap opera, and it's probably one of the funniest things I've ever seen. And there are several episodes, so if you can't get enough, you have some good viewing material. You can certainly have a Sands of Passion binge watch if you like. There's plenty of good stuff there. I can't recommend it highly enough.
Awesome. So we have competition.
Like
That's good.
Sorry?
Sounds like a lot of chafing to me.
Exactly. It's gritty. Gritty drama,
oh,
for sure.
God.
There you go.
Oh, no. No, it's not like that. It's Sharia compliant, like I told you. There's none of that.
Huh.
It's in very good taste.
So there's no head but behead.
Did either of you guys get a chance to look at it?
Yes, I did. It was actually pretty clever. It was
the freaking funniest thing.
Okay. All right. Well, since you know, we can never beat up on Islamists or Sharia law enough.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, since we can't really beat up on progressive spinelessness and refusal to, you know, acknowledge facts, we have a return of the button that doesn't work. Igor?
Yay!
Welcome to this week's edition of Moral Morons.
Hmm.
All right. Well,
who have you got this week?
Oh, we've got something that's just tasty and really loathsome.
Always.
This week's Moral Morons of the Week, and you know, I think these people, they're going to push Nancy Pelosi right out of the running for the
wow.
top.
Wow, they must be really morally inept.
There's a little town in England called Rotherham, and this is Britain, England, UK, and for the last 16 years, they estimate 14,000 children have been sexually abused, molested, gang raped, trafficked, and it turns out authorities knew about...
Please don't tell me that.
Authorities knew about a lot of these cases, and it turns out that I'm going to try to see if I can say this without yakking. It turns out that many of the bureaucrats involved were afraid to press charges, go further, get other entities such as law enforcement or perhaps a lynch mob involved. Because the perpetrators were described as Asian men.
I know what that means.
But let's take it a little further. In fact, when one delves into the stories, even the stories that are the news stories, and there have been several, at least from the UK, the Mail, I believe it was, even those stories refer to the perpetrators as groups of, quote, Asian men. If you read further, it turns out they are mostly, if not exclusively, Pakistani men.
And, now, isn't that a major immigrant group in England?
That is a major immigrant group in England. But I myself, I've done a little reading in different cultures. I have never heard Pakistanis referred to as Asian.
They are referred to as that in Britain.
Really?
Because it's considered racist to call them Pakistani for the most part.
Okay. I guess I should rephrase. I'd never seen them referred to as that prior to this sort of information becoming available. But yes, social workers knew about it, but they actually put in their reports that they didn't want to do anything further about this because they were afraid of being called racist.
That is such a powerful word that it can paralyze a town and enable 14,000 children.
1,400.
Oh, God, I thought you said 14,000 earlier.
Yeah. 1,400 is still a lot of kids.
Even
as
one,
young, as young as 11 years old. The more you read about the story, the better it gets. In one case, two fathers went to the house, two separate cases, went to the home where they knew their child, often from a broken home, you know, these
mm-hmm.
weren't perfect parents or anything.
Right.
Vulnerable, yes, were being abused. They made a ruckus, and the police came, and you know justice was done because
yes.
the parents were arrested and taken away.
For racism?
Yep.
The parents are saying, I want my 11-year-old daughter out of the room of that grown adult. In fact, one case, it was a naked schoolgirl under a bed.
Come on.
And the parent was arrested. Probably
and
for
was
disturbing
the girl
the
left
teeth.
There?
The girl was left there.
Oh, come on.
I kid you not.
Can we please not shuffle towards this future?
Yeah.
Too late.
England's there. Apparently, some people perhaps are in England are a little annoyed by this.
Annoyed?
But, yeah. So our moral morons of the week, you can read about it if you go to the independent.co.uk. The moral morons of the week are everybody in the UK's bureaucracy, law enforcement, social services, who knew without a doubt that gangs of Pakistani men were molesting, gang raping, sexually abusing, sexually trafficking white or Sikh children. Sikhs have been complaining about this for years and being ignored. But anybody who in those parts of the government bureaucracy who knew this was happening and refused to act on that knowledge or to pass it on to people who could do something about it because they were afraid of being called racist, those are my moral morons.
Now,
of the week.
Surely these people can finally be lumped in with the horrible, horrible Catholic Church who knew that some children, certainly not that many, but some children were being molested and didn't do anything about it. That makes you automatically evil when you do that. So I'm going to guess that now, because of this, politically correct bureaucrats are evil, right? And everyone finally knows it.
Let me correct one thing.
The Catholics did do something about it. They did not punish the perpetrators, but they got them out of the way. They didn't just come and arrest the parents who were complaining about it and let it go on.
Hey, what did they do with them? I thought they had moved them to another parish, or that's what I heard.
They moved them to another parish usually. Sometimes they got them completely out of the stream, but it wasn't like they just...
So they addressed it.
Oh, well, whatever. They attempted to address it.
And was law enforcement even part of that that situation with the Catholic Church? Now that I think about it, I don't believe anyone called the police,
no.
And the police said, oh, no, I'm not going to say anything bad about the Catholics. I don't recall that happening either. Yeah.
That was a sad thing, and it took lawsuits to get some real law.
To this day, everyone understands now that the Catholic Church is evil because of what happened there. So I would think that now everyone understands how really evil political correctness is and politically correct bureaucracies are, right? Because that's the standard we use. If you aid and abet in child abuse, you're evil.
You would think that.
Right.
You mean like our own cross border trafficking in children by gangs that have discovered that child trafficking is more lucrative than drug trafficking?
I forgot we do that too. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I forgot.
They're brown people,
too,
so you got to leave them alone.
We cannot throw stones. Yeah. We do it, too.
Because you know what? President Obama has said what's going on at the border is really not that big an issue, and the problem...
Yeah.
You know, is of course the Republicans, the entrenched Republicans, and since he said it, it has to be true.
Yeah. He's right.
Because he is the most confident, smartest president ever. But there's a whole lot going on there. But how can people live with themselves? Yeah, you know, I know some. I know an 11-year-old girl, 14-year-old girl, was doused with petrol and threatened to be let on fire if she complained or tried to run away. But, you know, it might be racist if I say that it was a Pakistani gang doing it.
You know how, like, when you were in school and you saw a bully picking on another kid and it really bothered you to see that poor kid getting abused like that, but you never said anything because what would happen if you did?
What always happened when I did it, I always stood up for the kid, and I was an ostracized kid.
And what happened to you?
I was ostracized. I got picked on, too. But I didn't care.
The bullies turn on you and beat the tar out of you. So
they never beat the tar out of me. They were scared of me.
Well, good for you. You would have to have had a set, though.
Lucky.
She's called scary for a reason.
Maybe
if only you had been
better one.
In England to help these children, most people will not confront the bully because the bully will turn around and beat the snot out of that person as well. And
in England, I'd probably get beheaded.
You will either get beheaded or at best, on a good day, they will lose their livelihood and be ostracized. Yeah. So.
And you'd be arrested for, you know.
You could be arrested. Yep.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
Okay. So.
Wow. We have got our priorities in order. Fabulous.
We do. And so horrible story, and even more horrible there was a famous philosopher, Hannah Arendt, scary smart, knows it, I'm mispronouncing her last name. She had a famous phrase called the banality of evil. Apparently we can update that and call that the bureaucracy of evil right now. Because, and it's just incredible, that fear of being called racist when just like, American newspapers are afraid of being called racist if they bothered to point out that 80% of black men who are murdered by other black men. That would be racist to point out that fact. And it's
It's been said lately that it's racist to say that.
I, in fact, know a high school student who is being taught in an advanced level class now that you can't use facts to make decisions. Because facts are inherently biased. So.
Yep.
This is being taught to the best and the brightest in our country now. It's all part of the College Board AP history. That's a whole other topic. But
So gravity is racist. You know, I've always knew gravity had it in for me. Wow. Okay. Well, how about some good news closer to home? How about some news about Lois Lerner, speaking of fair, objective, bureaucracy of evil.
There's good news about Lois Lerner? She's finally going
to
jail?
This is something I haven't heard.
It actually just came out this morning when I was putting my notes together and fending off the cats. let's see. It's so good, so new. I don't have any good music, so I've got to recycle here.
All the humanity and all the passengers feeding around.
Okay, so Lois Lerner, who, for the people who have been avoiding newspapers, they've been avoiding the Internet, because if they read the newspapers, Lois Lerner is, in fact, the cousin of Florence Nightingale. She's devoted her life to helping the sick and the poor, and, Mother Teresa looks at her with envy, because Lois Lerner will be beatified before Mother Teresa, because Lois Lerner is one with the angels. So Lois Lerner, in 2007, somebody said, you know, it looks like maybe the AFL-CIO isn't reporting accurately the money they spend on political activities. So in 2007, the national headquarters for the AFL-CIO, that is a large union, by the way, and women. I think it's right here before me that the unions, they donate almost exclusively to what party, ladies?
The Democrats.
That's right. So in 2006.
Gary, you should have done that in unison with me. Come on, he gave us a nice cue and everything. Next time together.
So girls, AFL-CIO is a large union. What do the unions contribute most of their political funds to?
The Democrats.
See, that's why we don't walk in step here.
You guys even made that sound sexy. I want to hear more of that. but in 2006, the AFL-CIO reported, the national headquarters, reported no direct or indirect political expenditures to the IRS.
None at all.
And that same year, the AFL-CIO reported, and I put this in bold, I even made it bigger so I would not miss it, they reported $29 million in political activities to the Department of Labor.
Huh.
And
so that is wonderful because they're getting the money out of politics, right?
They are getting the money out of politics. And
good for them.
Lois Lerner said, you know, let's just refer the investigation, the information to our Dallas office to determine whether examination is warranted.
Hmm.
Now, just to put this a little bit in perspective, it's Dallas, which is even better because there was a Tea Party group, I believe it was called True the Vote, out of Texas that spent, they wanted to be approved as a 501c, and they're often Exhibit A when people are talking about the fake IRS scandal. And the woman in charge who was behind True the Vote had never been audited in her business career. She had never probably seen an IRS agent. But once she applied to be a 501c, she was visited by the IRS, by the ATF, and several other government agencies who suddenly, by an amazing coincidence, wanted to find out about their activities over and beyond True the Vote.
Wait, her personal
business,
activities?
Personal and business. Her business was subjected to several long, lengthy, expensive investigations by different government entities.
So this was out of doubt.
For the crime, for daring to want to be a nonprofit, shall we say, conservative-leaning organization. She was subjected to 2 years of harassment, and it all began when she went to the IRS.
So this was out of the same IRS office that was going to investigate the AFL-CIO expenditures?
Very likely, but they were both in Texas. But it was just interesting. So we have on one hand, we have the AFL-CIO not reporting to the IRS that they spent $29+ million on political activities, but then they confessed to the Department of Labor, hey, yeah, we did.
Okay.
And all that happened was, go on.
I was going to say, so has anything happened to the AFL-CIO?
Well, the Daily Caller, who I got this from, says, it does not appear any further investigation was conducted. Let's see.
They were too busy investigating the True the Vote lady.
Right.
Yeah. So just to get a little historical context, the Bush administration, the evil Republican Bush administration.
You repeat yourself,
yes. Yes, I do. It's redundant, isn't it?
Yeah.
They mandated more detailed disclosure requirements for labor unions.
Mm-hmm.
But those requirements were relaxed by the Obama administration's labor department. And so I've got a guy named Don Todd, who is the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Office of Labor Management Standards.
Hmm.
He says, quote, the law's never been enforced, quote.
Never?
That's what he said.
Never? Wow.
He also went on to say, the IRS was telling us more to enforce the law than they would collect. I love these standards. I mean, this stuff like this is awesome because, you know, I mean, we've got the lost emails. We've got the backups that are too hard to find. These are going to be great things to tell the IRS on April 15th. And I've just got another one. It costs you more to enforce that law than you would collect. So just give me a pass.
Yeah.
So that was the Daily Caller today, and like I said, I just had to throw it in there, so I obviously missed some of my notes, but I just thought that was just...
I don't suppose anybody's addressed how much it's cost them to investigate all tea parties, has anyone?
That is not germane to the discussion because it is, in fact, false scandal. And that's been proven.
Wow, that didn't follow at all. I said that.
Yeah. I know that it is a proven false scandal because one of the Truesberry hate sites said that was what it was.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Which
and
one?
I can't recall, and we're not going to give them any traffic. Listeners, NSA, if you want to do a Google alert on Truesberry, Truesbury, you can see some of the hate.
And while you're doing it, read some of the comics. They're great.
The comics are outstanding.
Hmm.
Okay.
Written by a talented team.
I think so.
Talented team. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, good news about Lois Lerner and her stately work on behalf of the public.
I failed to see the good news.
I'm sorry, what was that?
I said I failed to see the good news. I'm sorry.
Oh.
Well, you got my hopes up again. You do that all the time.
I'm a tease.
You're so excited.
I am.
A terrible
that was, yeah, I mean, she's doing good work for the Banana Republic of Obama every
we
day.
We need some good Banana Republic theme music. We should all think
I'm
going to
be careful. Banana Republic's going to be racist in a minute. You best be careful.
I always thought that was odd.
I'm sorry.
I always thought it was odd that they named that chain Banana Republic. What were they going for there?
They were hipster before hipster was scoffed at.
It's like naming your clothing line Pol Pot or something, you know, Killing Fields clothes. Why would you do that? I don't think it's attractive.
It's not that silly. I mean, we have people wearing the Che Guevara, I am a serial killer T-shirts.
Remember Gwyneth Paltrow and her little Shining Path bag that she had when she was down in South America? That went over well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
appreciated that. Yeah,
you got to love the historical awareness of our fashion.
You know what?
Leadership.
We should scoop everyone and start an ISIS line of fashion wear. We would be so freaking ahead of everyone.
At least an ISIS line of cutlery, I think, would really move.
No, people who actually work for a living use cutlery. I'm talking about like hipsters who need fashionable clothing to wear. That's who we want to hit up here. So.
Oh.
They already have those things.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, you can get those baklavas or however you say it. Yeah. So Urban Outfitters has been doing
balaclava.
A good job. But balaclava, what is it called?
Balaclava.
Thank you.
Balaclava is a pastry.
Okay, let's take a deep breath for a minute here. You know, bananas, baklava, we're making ourselves hungry here, but let's just take a minute to... like a mental cleanser of the mental palate.
Better already.
He's getting into it. Okay, Igor, we have to get on with the show. We have 6 minutes left. Okay, dude, sorry.
No peanuts. No peanuts for you.
All right. Gosh, he is such a temperamental artist. Well, ladies, right, girls, we've burned through most of the show. We got to... About 5 minutes left, and that means I shut up while you guys talk. How about a quick Liberty Island update from Scary Smart Jimmy K. Wilson?
That sounds good.
Not a whole lot new is going on. We're looking at a launch and for the full-length publications in late October, early November. And I suspect the books are going to be out before then, but that's going to be the formal launch.
Cool.
And we just keep trying to have good new stuff up every week or two. If you go out on Truesday, you can almost always catch the new stuff. And, of course, you'll catch Truesberry up there three times a week, too.
Fabulous.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's see. I also, you read The Giver, I believe.
I did.
Scary.
For the first
Tell
time.
Us about
for the first time. It was amazing. It's... it's on its way to being argued about the same way the Hunger Games is, where liberals claim it and conservatives claim it. The liberals are trying to claim The Giver because it's a
Well, how do they claim that?
Some sort of argument about capitalism. I don't understand it. I don't see any capitalism in The Giver at all.
The crimes they commit against logic, those people. The crimes.
No kidding. But it's a wonderful book. It shows what happens in a dystopia when people have gone through so much pain that they just decide to eradicate all emotion or all pain. But in eradicating all the pain, they also eradicate all the emotion and all the joy and all the ethics.
That's the only way to
do it. The only ethics, I guess so. The only ethics that they have, since they don't have pain to give you ethics, the only ethics that they have are those that are set up by laws, and nobody changes the laws. It's the most static thing I've ever seen, and it is an incredible book, absolutely incredible.
Wow. Do they have a...
Sorry.
I just wanted to have
thing.
A...
I can add that they have a movie out now, and I actually saw that, a movie of The Giver that came out a week or two ago. Anyway, 2-3 weeks ago. I don't know if it's still in theaters, but if it is, you should catch it. It's wonderful.
I plan to.
Yeah, well done. Really well done.
Okay, and also, how many books are in that series, Scary Smart?
It's what they're calling a quartology. It's got 4 different books.
Wow. Okay.
And it's a good thing because The Giver ends with a cliffhanger, and she doesn't answer the question at the end of that book until the 3rd book, which I haven't read yet. So,
wow.
I had to look to see where she answered it. I'm like, okay, this does get answered somewhere. Great. So.
All right. I've been working on a short story of my own for Liberty Island, which became less short as time went on. So my editors will have their work cut out for them. And so I've been behind on both reading and seeing anything good. So I will take this information from you and see what I can do about it. Ms. Always Right, have anything else to add?
I just wanted to add that the adorable little Christian film, which was called God's Not Dead, is now available on Amazon. I forget what it's called. You know, where you instant
Prime
video. So you can go right on Amazon and watch it, rent it or buy it and watch it immediately. So the film is God's Not Dead, and that came out, I think, last winter, something like that. And it stars my future husband, Kevin Sorbo, and a bunch of other talented people. And it's really cute. It's the first Christian movie I ever saw. And, it's a little kitschy here and there, but it's fun and it's pleasant. And you can watch it with your kids. And again, Kevin Sorbo is downright creepy in it, too. So there are some wonderful acting. Now I don't remember the actress's name, but... there are a lot of, obviously, different story threads going on, and there's a reporter who has a very tragic moment, and whoever that actress is, she's amazing. So, sorry I don't have her name. Shame on me. But if you check that movie out, you'll know what I mean.
All right. All right. Well, we have a minute 20 seconds left, and I think it's only appropriate that for all of our listeners, we remind them that we mock because we love.
I just love... Dear leader, more than anything in the whole wide world.
Yes, that sums up our feelings entirely for President Barack Obama. It's been the end of another show here with the Right Wing Riot, and we are out. We are not, Igor.
We're out of time for today's riot. You can find us on the web at rightwingriot.com, no hyphen. All one word, Right Wing Riot. Thanks to our generous internet radio host, Daria Ann DiGiovanni.